care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
We're back. Another day. We're here again. It's Tuesday. Comes quick, Ian.
Yeah, it sure does, mate.
Good morning, everybody. It's Ray Lenton here with Dad's on the Air, and we've got a reasonable show booked for you today. I just want to say hello to my good friend sitting on the other side of the desk with the magic fingers working all the dials. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Good morning, Ray. And good morning, listeners. And, we'll have a good program for you this morning.
And Phil should be here this morning because our lofty friend Bill Cable, we've lost him.
Well, he's run off. He's gone off around the world. He will be back, though.
He will be back.
We lost him for 8 weeks or something, but he'll be back in June or July. July, I think, actually. Yep. So, Bill Cable fans, you're just going to have to wait until July to hear Bill.
Yeah, he's off trekking. So Phil was going to come up today and give us a hand and fill in, but unfortunately he's not well, man. He's got some sort of ear infection.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that lurgy around. The weather here in Sydney this morning is not glorious.
It's not good.
And there's a lot of flu and colds, and there's this horrible lurgy that's going around that's laying people up for a couple of weeks. It's not such a bad one. It's just enough to just kind of take the edge off your day, and it doesn't really make you feel sick enough to put you in bed for or anything like that. It just takes all the fun out of whatever it is that you have to do. It's nasty.
People are generally going to work and spreading it around.
Yeah, well, that seems to be what's happening, and it's pretty prevalent. I've had it for a couple of weeks, although I've got to say I'm feeling a bit better this morning.
Good. And, you know, I've got to be honest with you, I'm not feeling that great myself. It's been a horrible week, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. We had a good weekend. Well, what happened to you? What was so horrible in your world?
I don't like this time of the year. Anzac Day always just brings me down, eh? It's just a heavy time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is. It is, and when you get the warmongers and all that, and when you think that the whole, you know, most of these wars just happen to keep the arms industry in cash and keep, you know, they make all these bombs, so we got to go and let them off somewhere, blowing the arms and legs off children in countries where, you know, where we don't have to go and look at the harm that we're doing. Sure, look, a lot of these soldiers, you know, great young men and women, you know, the country's finest, sent off to foreign places to die horrible deaths in oblivion and dust and squalor. It's a tragedy. The sooner the human race grows out of this notion of warfare and we find a sane, mature way to deal with our problems, the better.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched that show on Fromelles last night. Did you see that documentary?
No, extraordinary. No, I didn't. Fromelles, well, that whole situation, I mean, they just sent a whole bunch of diggers out as a decoy to, you know, to get machine gunned. You tell the story. You saw the program. But what I've heard...
It was horrific. Yeah. But, look, thousands of young men, not only from Australia but from other places, just as a decoy, you're right.
Well, us Kiwis too. I'm a Kiwi, and we're Anzacs, mate, you know, Australia, New Zealand. It's, you know, it both countries equally. We had, you know, blokes dying at Gallipoli, at Long Tan. You know, Kiwis, if there's Aussies in a blue, well, you can bet he'll have his Kiwi mate not too far away backing him up.
Exactly. And the thing that stood out for me about that story was that the two other most significant officers, other than the general that signed the order to send them in, went to each other and said, this is going to be a massacre, and agreed, and it still happened. And then when it was all over, the Germans buried everybody, and it's taken this long to find them. After the fact, they sent letters home to the families and said, your sons are missing in action. And the families got no other answer.
Yeah, no closure.
They weren't told that their young men were in Fromelles. And so there was just this mystery because they just never turned up after the war and nobody ever declared them to be dead. The army knew all along. The guy that pushed it along went to the army in Australia and said, oh, look, you know, we think this is where they are. This is the evidence. And the army said, oh, look, sorry, your evidence is not good enough. And you think the army would have said, what can we do to help find these blokes? They knew they were missing. So a mistake all that way back then. And then an attitude within the military today
just
shows you that
cover it up.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah, well,
nothing's changed. There was a story about a battle in South Korea where Australian forces were behind the lines and behind a front row of South Korean soldiers, and then a major push by Chinese hardened 10,000 Chinese soldiers pushed through, and hundreds of young men lost again. in a, another stuff up, and you look around the world and you go, what's changed? Are they still, if they were still stuffing up now as bad as they were back then, what's going on that we don't know about?
But you got to look at, I mean, if our governments can't even organise a bus or a train timetable, yeah. I mean, how can they be expected to be trusted with logistics that, yeah. you know, that mean young men's lives? You know, like if they can't even get the train to get to the station on time or the bus down the road on time, how can they organise, you know, 5,000-10,000 young men to go out into a paddock just to kill each other and to do it, you know, in a reasonable, sensible way that's going to achieve some kind of end? I mean, from our, the whole thing was a decoy because they had some other action going on.
They were just sent out there to die. They were just sent out there to die.
They were cannon fodder.
Because there was something going on in the Somme.
Yep.
And they didn't want the Germans to send extra soldiers down there. So, yeah, ugly. Very ugly. You know, I was listening to Channel 7 on Sunday morning, I think it was, and their international relations expert was talking about foreign aid. And the doctor guy, what's his name? I can't think of his name. They both agreed that about 80% of foreign aid is spent in Australia. 80% of it.
Foreign aid?
Of foreign aid is all of it spent here.
Well, what's and that? That put in changing the roofs in the detention centres so they can't climb up on top, which they did anyway.
They provide... scholarships for overseas students to come to Australia, and they call that foreign aid.
Okay.
And we educate and send them home. And the other 20%, if it is spent in the country, it's spent on Australian companies doing the work in those countries. And yet, you know, you sort of look at that and you go, hang on, that's not the view that most people in Australia have.
No. You kind of think that foreign aid, that's where, you know, we send people in there to basically find people who are starving or who are in desperate need of something. And we provide it and we build schools, you
think.
Help them out.
You'd think so.
You know, we help fix the roads and we help children put shoes on their feet so they can go to school. That's what you would think.
You would. And so, you know, the people back then expected something from governments and in a sense trusted them. And so do we. And I guess we need to look back to find out that trust is unjust. They don't deserve it.
Well, you know, you really...
Not much has changed.
Well, what's changed is, of course, we've got media, we've got, you know, we've got 24 news channels.
But
they are complicit, but they're shining a light on it and the information's there if you want to get through the slick presentation. And,
I guess
you
that's
know,
true, yeah.
You know, and Rupert Murdoch's slant. I mean, most of our news comes from Rupert Murdoch, who was basically a right-wing fascist. Let's face it, he doesn't own this station, people.
There was one of the young men, one person survived. One person survived from Els, and one of the things he said was he said that they told him as he was embarking on the battle that if anybody drops in front of him, whether they're wounded or not, they were to be rolled over and he was to carry on. And he said, I was running through the battlefield, and he said, I had human flesh in my hair. He said, how are you supposed to live with that? And he has. You know, he's an old man. He's probably in his 80s or 90s. And he's here. They interviewed him. And he did live with it. But he was a father and he was a brother. You know, how many of those young men did we lose back then were fathers?
Well, look, and in those days, you know, they didn't accept the trauma that we do. I mean, if guys, you know, they've been on the front for a couple of years and they just simply had enough and snapped and walked away from the guns and... You know, they just walked away. Yeah. I mean, they would line them up and shoot them.
Yeah.
You know, like whose side are you on? Like,
to some degree, Gallipoli was the same. You know, they sent him to the wrong bay, you know, and into a theatre of war that could only result in what resulted, slaughter.
Yeah.
Because of the land-lying geography. And another major mess-up by a general in England.
Well, it was Winston Churchill who was behind Gallipoli. He was the big wig who okayed.
What was the real story?
Look, I read the history of it a long time ago. I mean, it was more a naval thing. It was, you know, so that they could get ships in, you know, and the whole thing was a complete failure.
Disaster.
It was a disaster. They'd achieved absolutely nothing. All those young men went there and died horrible, degraded deaths
in
the mud.
And those that were with them that survived came home and lived horrible, degraded lives.
Yeah.
As
shell shock, you know, waking up screaming in the middle of the night, unable to form proper relationships with wives and children.
These are
just shattered men, shattered
individuals. This is the generation that taught us how to be parents. This is the generation that taught us how to love, how to manage our relationships. No wonder society's in so much trouble. Families, you know, the Battle of Britain, I'll never forget the Battle of Britain. I knew a couple who lived through it, an English couple, and the impact night after night, the fear, the people that survived it were tragically impact, and the focus is on the death toll. To some degree, those that died were in some ways the lucky ones. They didn't have to live with that horror and that trauma and manage their lives. Yeah, horrible stuff. So that's Anzac weekend.
Yeah, war's hell. War is hell. It's and horrible. The sooner we can wipe the word from our vocabulary, get rid of it. There's nothing glorious about it.
There's got to be another way.
Well, but we've got all our kids playing, you know, Mortal Kombat and all these computer games, which you know, mean that they can sit there in their bedroom and quietly, you know, replicate.
Hack somebody up.
Well, replicate some battle like Long Tan or something and sit there and choose whether they want to fight as a Vietnamese or an American and pretty much have all the firepower and everything and, you know, everything pretty realistic except if they happen to cop a bullet, well, then they just, you know, 2 seconds later push restart or something and they're up and at it again kind of thing without any of the consequences.
It reminded me of our conversation last week about women on the front line and you go, what would you want to send anybody there for?
Well, you know? Did you see Q&A last night? Because they had, I should know the names, but some high up person in the Australian Defence Force basically said, look, if you send women into the front line, you know, you're going to have an inordinate number of women dead bodies at the end of the battle. I mean, they are going to be more represented in the casualties. And everyone's like, why should that? Women can do this. And the guy says, well, you know, it's like we don't allow women to play first grade rugby league because this is a violent, you know, situation.
It's a gladiator sport.
It's a gladiator sport. There's no women in there. Mm. Now, women, I don't know, we don't ban women from rugby league, do we?
Yeah.
They're not allowed to go in there?
No, they're not allowed to play after, you know, I think maybe under eights, under tens, somewhere around there. Young girls do play rugby league, junior rugby league, up until about somewhere between 8 and 12.
And you've also got to look at the fact that if women, like at the Olympic Games, for example, and all of the running, the swimming, you know, throwing things, jumping over things, all of these sports which require physical prowess, if they didn't have women's events, which it's basically sexism, let's face it, no woman would ever win a medal. She would never get into a final in any event. Maybe gymnastics, there's a few things that women are naturally better at than men, but the majority of the things requiring endurance, strength, stamina, speed, any kind of strength at all, the women wouldn't get a look in. Mm. Now, you want to put them on the battlefield, that, you know, they can't run as fast, they're not as strong, they can't jump over walls as quickly, you know, it's naive, really.
It's interesting. I just find it interesting. And then, so that was the Anzac weekend, and young Alicia being found last week. Parents being charged with murder.
The stepfather and the mother.
Yeah.
A classic case of the mother and her new partner murdering an innocent child who suddenly
allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. They found the body and, you know.
But the whole thing, ugly. And didn't set us up for a nice weekend. A young father lost his daughter. A young girl not properly looked after in our society again, not going to school. I thought that was interesting that there was, and we'll see what comes out in the facts when this comes to trial, but a little girl of her age not going to school. You know, I wonder what, I heard some people say over the weekend that the father, the natural father, the biological father should have done more to protect her in that circumstance, but I wonder what it's like for separated dads.
Well, and the courts and the AVO system and the police are all there preventing.
What do you do?
The biological father from doing what needs to be done to save a little girl or a little boy from, you know, being trampled underfoot and by mum's new boyfriend and their new social life, and suddenly the kid's inconvenient and in the way and crying in the middle of the night and crying for its daddy, which they really, you know, they're not interested in.
No.
It's so tragic, mate. There's a lot of tragedy out there in the world.
All in all, it wasn't a great week for me.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree with that. Well, I went to the Easter show. I took my son and one of his friends to the Easter show yesterday. And besides being fleeced for, you know, a bunch of sort of, you know, second-rate, cheap, nasty trinkets, we had a pretty good time. You know, it was good out there.
And I must admit, the chocolate over the weekend was pretty good too. That was somewhat uplifting.
Yeah, well, uplifting, yeah. Well, your kids running around in circles. Too much chocolate. It's like everything, and, you know, we overdo it. We just overdo it, you know. And, of course, as a separated father, well, you got to bury your kids in chocolate.
They're good,
you know,
that's right.
Show them how much you love them.
And then you clean up, you know, like because they got so much, they come and say, hey, Dad, you want an Easter egg? And you go, yeah. So I've been eating as much as them.
Well, mate, I got a car full of it. My boy left. He's left a heap in the. I've got a bag, couple of bags of Easter eggs that have just been left in the car that he just had too much to carry, and I'll pick them up tomorrow, kind of. You want an Easter egg? I've got them out there, Ray. You can help yourself.
Beauty. I need some more. Ray. Yeah. What do you get from chocolate?
Oh, it's sugar, isn't it? You just get a sugar.
You get
bar.
A dose of sugar, but I think you get an endorphin rush as well. It's pretty good.
Oh, well, maybe I'll have some too. Yeah. Well, we'll take a bit of a break. Me and Ray are going to go out to my car and we're going to pig out on a few Easter eggs here.
We'll be back.
We'll be back.
In distress, 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the air.
Yeah, and we are. We're back with Dad's on the air. We're on 89.3 2GLF FM. Any more news, Ian?
Oh, mate, there's a lot of news in the paper over the last week. Let's start with a bit of fluff here. A tour of troubles. Actor loses custody of fans. Los Angeles... This is not actually, this article is out of the Thursday's Daily Telegraph and is not attributed to anybody, so I'll just read a little bit of it. After losing custody of his twins in an LA court yesterday, Charlie Sheen jetted straight to Washington to resume his Torpedo of Truth tour. But his rush to the Capitol was seen as being in vain, with reports emerging that the 45-year-old troubled star is already bombing on stage. Audience members were spotted leaving yesterday's night show early. Terrible. So there you go. Poor old Charlie Sheen. He's lost his kids. He's losing everything. He's losing the plot. What can we say?
It's the ultimate rupture, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, too much, you know, too much that you really, you've just got to say. I mean, all this celebrity appeal and it's all ridiculous. It's certainly not doing this man who is probably underneath it all a decent, talented, good human being. And he's you know, the wheels are falling off his cart and we're all kind of standing back here in average world laughing at him. You know, he's providing us with cheap entertainment as we watch his life disintegrate.
Yeah.
Shocking stuff.
With his kids watching.
Yeah. Well, he's lost custody, so his twins, you know, they'll be able to, yeah, look. His appeal was to no avail as Sheen lost his battle to retain custody of his two-year-old sons. Two-year-old boys. A judge ruled that Mueller, that's the wife, should remain legal and physical custody of twins Bob and Max, despite rumors of her drug relapse. Mueller was all smiles after leaving the court, stopping to respond, "No comment." When she was asked if she was happy with the decision. Sheen had been seeking temporary custody of the boys following reports that Mueller had returned to rehab after a week of alleged substance abuse.
Mm.
Poor little buggers, eh? All that money, all that wealth, all that fame, you know.
All that drama.
All that drama. Exactly what two-year-old boys do not need. Shocking stuff. We'll just put that one aside.
Let's hope it gets better for him.
Yeah, well, let's hope so.
I've got some good news.
Oh, good.
Women prisoners, they have more sex in prison than men.
Women prisoners? What, with each other, or how do they manage that?
I didn't quite get it. It's only a small story, but it says women prisoners have more sex than men while in jail.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I think that's sexist. I think blokes in jail should be allowed to have as much sex as women in jail can have.
I think so, wouldn't you?
That's a basic human right, let's face it.
The study found that a third of female prisoners have had intercourse with another inmate. I thought they were all in together. Are they all in together?
Well, it sounds like some kind of lesbian carry-on.
A survey by the University of New South Wales revealed that only 7% of male prisoners have had sex while in confinement. Sex inside prisoners was found to be overwhelmingly consensual.
Overwhelmingly consensual? That's overwhelmingly. Not what I heard. What about dropping the soap in the shower and all that kind of stuff?
Well, you hear all those stories. Do they have men and women in prisons together?
No.
So you'd think the girls are all having sex with the girls and the blokes are all having sex with the blokes.
Well, they should give them a couple of days when they can all get together and, well, I mean, they're in jail to be, you know. But the whole notion of putting people in jail to punish them is ridiculous. You should put them in jail and re-educate them and show them that the foolishness of their ways, you know, this idea of punishing people, what you're basically doing with jail is creating a university of crime where people with no morality, no ideas, bad education, bad social background, probably no father is a huge part of it.
All live together.
Meet other people in a similar degraded state and they fester and, you know, thrive.
Then let them out.
We let them out. Exactly. And there's very little done to rehabilitate people, very little re-education programs. There's very little done. You know, this notion of punishing people who have gone off the rails is very 15th century, let's face it.
It is.
In the 21st century, shouldn't we be looking at why these people have gone astray and seeing what we can do to help them rather than just throw more garbage into their lives, give them more that they have to deal with?
And then let them out. You got to remember that, folks. They've got to come out.
That's it. Well, look, I've got one here. Richard Noone, or Noon, with an E on the end, has written, "Getting square eyes as a child can lead to early death by TV. It is written by Richard. An alarming study found children as young as six who watch too much television have the same narrowed arteries behind their eyes as would spark health fears in adults. A Sydney University study out today found children who spend the most time in front of a screen had narrower retinal arterioles than those who regularly participated in outdoor physical activity. A unique study of 1,500 six- and seven-year-olds in 34 Sydney primary schools found those with narrower arteries had an increased risk of heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes in later life. There's a quote here from Dr. Benjamin Gopinpath. We found children with a high level of physical activity had a more beneficial microvascular profile compared to those with the lowest levels of physical activity. Well, we kind of knew all that anyway, didn't we really?
We've been talking about it for years.
Get the kids out, get them kicking a ball, get them throwing a frisbee, running around, take them to the beach. The beach is free. Mm. That's what people say. Oh, we can't afford to live at the beach. You can't afford not to live at the beach. It's false economy. You know, if you live out west somewhere, you got to pay to go to the movies. You got to pay to pretty well do anything. You go to the beach. It's healthy.
Yeah.
You
and
can stay
free.
There all day. Yeah. You know, provided your kids can swim, teach them before you send them out into the surf. Make sure they can swim. That's something that really every child, every Australian child should know how to swim. It should be compulsory.
It should be. And can you just tell me the name of that plug again, eh?
Which bloke?
The bloke that did that.
Oh, his name was Dr. Bamini Gopinath.
Yeah, that's it.
Gopinath.
Yeah.
Dr. Bamini Gopinath.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah,
it sounds like a good name.
Well, we'll go on. The study found that children averaged almost 2 hours a day before a TV or computer screen had just 36 minutes in organized physical activity. We find the changes to the arteries are quite representative of what's going on inside the rest of the body, Dr. Bopneth said. So the fact these changes are taking place in kids so young is very alarming. Optometrist Association spokesman, and you won't get such a thrill, Adrian Bell, said a narrowing of adults' arteries behind the eye would prompt optometrists to refer people for heart checks. Heart checks. So there you go.
Well, that's a good outcome for that. Optometrists referring people for heart checks. That's a good idea. Well, that's a good idea. Have a look at your eyes. They reckon the eyes are the window to the soul, don't they?
Well, they do indeed.
They do.
They do indeed. So there's obviously something to that. Well, look, I've got another one here. Widows fight to deliver hubby's IVF baby. I mean, this has just got to go in the tragedy file. Andrew Clennell has written in last Thursday's Daily Telegraph, a woman fighting to have her dead husband's baby has launched a new court battle to take his frozen sperm outside New South Wales for use in IVF treatment. A Supreme Court judge will soon decide whether to grant Jocelyn Edwards possession of her husband Mark's semen, which is held by IVF Australia. What do you think of that, Ray? It's all just so this kid, if she has it, is going to grow up without a father.
Yeah.
It's all tragedy.
It just highlights that moral dilemma, though, you know, in the way that if everybody's alive and things are relatively normal and somebody has a condition that stops them falling pregnant, you go, yeah, well, it's a technology that can deliver something. But it all goes wrong in the moral end of it, doesn't it?
Well, and here's the husband's dead. I mean, okay, you know, to want to carry on his genes, his family name, whatever she's trying to do. I mean, the man's dead. You're not going to bring him back.
No.
You're going to bring a disadvantaged child into the world who's not going to have a father. Maybe he'll have a stepfather or whatever. It's just not ideal. And the technology that enables this, you know, this sort of thing to become an issue, without the technology, There'd be nothing to write about. There'd be nothing here. You've got to say in this particular
exactly
case,
right. Yeah.
IVF technology is at fault. You know, this should never have been a possibility. And you know, you feel for that, for everybody involved. I'm just glad it never happened to me.
Yeah, same here. And you know, there was another case like this in England too. I'm not sure what happened there. I thought that was the one, but yeah, you've got to ask yourself some questions about whether she's moving on with her life or not, wouldn't you?
Well, exactly. Mm. You know, and I mean, there's a photo over there, a lovely woman, you know, very attractive woman. Well, who knows? she obviously can't get over it. I mean, that, you know, and fair enough, he was the love of her life, whatever. But this idea of having his child in absentia just doesn't really...
Obviously, we're saying no because she's still involved in legal proceedings. Hopefully, it'll remain that way.
Yeah, hopefully the courts will have the good sense to just... Yeah, but it's...
I'm surprised that it's still there, that there's not provision for...
Oh, because obviously so there's money behind it and she can afford to pay lawyers to go in there and argue nonsense, you know. And lawyers will just take...
Somebody
take
must be getting paid to keep the sperm viable, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. IVF Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, what's that about? So yeah, you'd think that those guidelines would be there and that sort of stuff would just be discarded once somebody... is although I guess you've got to have a system to make that happen. It just tells you how complicated our society is. It is.
This technology
beyond belief
just provides mega levels of complication that obviously the people who invented it all,
and the expense of litigation, the expense of the taxpayer of providing the opportunity to litigate, let alone the expense of litigation for her. She must have reasonable resource to be able to do that.
Exactly.
You wouldn't think the taxpayer would be paying her legal bill.
Well, you'd hope not. Anyway, a sad case, and Dad's on the air feels sorry for all of them.
Yes, we do. It's just we're compassionate. It's just not
good.
We're good people.
We try to be. Well, I wouldn't make that claim every day myself personally, but I try. I do try some days. One more here. Schoolyard standover. This is basically nonsense. Tuesday, on the 19th last Tuesday, Daily Telegraph, a case where a Year 7 student extorted $4,000 from another boy was one of 530 serious incident reports in schools referred to police in 2010. This was written, by the way, by Bruce McDougall. We better acknowledge him. The extortion started with demands for $20 at a time, then escalated to $100 several times a week. The victim's brother, who was in Year 10, reported the extortion to the school's deputy principal. The extortion came to light when the victim's father went to recover money he had hidden and found it all missing. The victim was told the school, who he alleges has been extorting money from him, the father made threats against the extortionist, stating that if he didn't get his money back, he would blow up their house. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Well, it's all, you know, it just goes from bad to worse, doesn't it? You've really got to say, well, with people who resort to that sort of thing, who can you believe? And this idea of being able to get $4,000 from a Year 7 student.
Yeah.
And what did the other kid do with the $4,000? I mean, what's he driving
$4,000 Porsche or something? Yeah,
you don't get a Porsche for $4,000. He must have a really good bike, though.
He must have
BMX. Yeah, really good BMXs with the, you know, fiber optic frames and all the extra, you know, stickers and all that stuff on it. I mean, you know, $4,000. Well, you know. Yeah.
Might have been party time. Yeah. For the boys.
You'd think so. Party time for someone, except the father, whose money it obviously was, and he obviously is not happy about
it. Not happy, because he used a bit of extortion and stuff himself, didn't he?
Well, he used
threats. I wonder if that worked for him.
Oh, well, it says the case was just one of hundreds of serious situation reports lodged with police by the Education Department. The reports obtained by the Daily Telegraph under Freedom of Information laws showed police are responding to more than 5 calls a day from schools over incidents involving weapons, violence, drugs, and threats. In another case, no, we don't want to go there.
Five incidents a day. I wonder if that's in each school or just in one area, or if that's the whole of policing in New South Wales.
Well, that's what the Education Department reports, that there are 5 calls a day to the Education Department about those incidents.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
that's pretty serious.
Well, it is. It is. Well, it just goes to show, you know, I mean, society's running amok, you know, and people who, you know, stand over and bullying, you know, that the big issue, bullying, well, that's a very serious form of bullying, to it extort is. Money from a kid, obviously under threats of physical duress.
And
implied threats to the safety of the students have been passed on via family members. The father has informed the school that several family members, both Australian and overseas, have been contacted. Blah, 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 blah.
What really concerns me about those stories, Ian, is that we have this generation of kids who don't trust anybody to go seeking support from them.
Well, this is right. Now, we've had this debate before. I personally am an advocate of smacking. I think smacking, when a kid is an infant, I'm not talking about smacking your kids when they grow up. I'm talking about a toddler in nappies, so that basically the main impact is to make noise and to let the kid know that there are boundaries outside of which he is not safe and inside of which he is safe. The problem with these kids, in my opinion, is they don't have boundaries and they don't feel safe anywhere. And their answer is to walk around the streets at night with a knife, because that makes them feel safe.
Well, I guess that talks somewhat of the perpetrator, but for the victim, that when you look at a kid going to school being intimidated in that way, handing over that much money that he's actually stolen from his father in order to do so, it makes you wonder just how many people could he have told about the situation to get support before it got to the point.
Yeah, I mean, $4,000 is a lot of money to have.
And if it was at $100 a time a couple of times a week, it was a couple of weeks. It took a while.
It took a while, exactly.
See, you know, I'd like to think that we lived in a society that engaged children such that they could be trusted to be told about these things.
Yeah, made them feel confident that there was some adult that they
could
turn to.
Who could find a solution. Yeah,
to help them out, exactly, yeah, with this problem. And it was only his brother who went to the deputy principal. Well, you know, this kid who allegedly took all this money and gave it to the other kid.
And it was obviously at $4,000. I mean, it wouldn't have stopped if there hadn't been an intervention. So obviously,
well, they probably ran out of money. I mean, how much money did the old man have stashed away?
Maybe that's what brought it to a head. That's even sadder if that's what happened, that nobody actually found out about it before it got so serious that the money had run out, and obviously the threat had become more real. But I think we need to look at that side. It's one thing to talk about the perpetrators or those people that are out there bullying other people. That's one side of the argument. But the other side is that children are still reluctant to come looking for support. And that says something about all of the adults in our community and our lifestyle, parents included. Not necessarily that they're doing a bad job or it's their fault. But,
general isolation in our society, you know, across the board. I mean, you know, a society where you get people who drop dead in their unit and nobody finds them there till 6 months later, when the postman complains about the smell. I mean, this is the kind of society we live in, where people are not connected, where, you know, the lines of communication with all Twitter and Facebook and all these amazing, you know, networks of we're all so connected, but in fact we're actually not. It's
just, and I think we'd all like to think that our children would come home in those circumstances and say, "Hey mum, hey dad, this is what's happening to me at school and I don't like it. Give me a hand.
I need help. Yeah, I need help. I need help to deal with this kid. Yeah. He's already taken my lunch money twice this week and he's getting more vicious and violent and I don't have an answer. Help me, Dad."
Yep. So I think it says a lot more about us than it says about the kids.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Well, they are a product of our society, the society that we've created. And a lot of people, you know, I mean, you know, the pressure of work these days, the pressure to pay the mortgage, to pay the bills.
Yep.
You know, the pressure on a lot of parents, on a lot of families, just to survive, you know, to deal with issues like that. They take a lot of time, a lot of energy out of somebody's already very busy schedule.
Not to mention the energy bills. You know, look at all of the pressures that are around right now. It's just extraordinary. It's an extraordinary time. Financially, in our country's history, it's an extraordinary time.
Well, and in time, the whole world. I mean, come on, we've got all these riots and rebellions going on across North Africa, the Middle East. I mean, we've got the Chinese. It looks like they might be going to, you know, the fifth generation of Chinese leadership since the revolution. This is the crucial time. The Russians dropped communism after the fifth generation of leaders, and we're about to come up. Hu Jintao is about to hand on to the next generation, which will be the fifth. So the Chinese, and this is, we're talking, you know, a huge proportion of the world's population living to our north, our major market, where, you know, our mining boom is completely dependent on China and the Chinese. You know, this massive instability, I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's interesting times. It's interesting times.
Well, look, let's turn to Peter Vandervoort. Rock and pop, Peter Vandervoort. This is a song of his, off his album, Our Stolen Children, which is available from the Dads on the Air website, dadsontheair.net. This is Peter Vandervoort.
The pain is intense for both father and child.
We try to adjust, Dad.
hard to cope with a life full of stress.
That's leaving us empty, our emotions a mess.
Despite our separation, our love will not die. With courage and hope, it will keep us together. Help us to cope.
Hey, all you children, we don't see your dad. We both need each other to share what we have. Fathers love their children as much as mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you.
There will come a time before we're too old.
We'll sit down together, Dad, and the truth will be told.
We'll discover the lies that have kept us apart.
No more will they try stealing what's in our hearts.
And so we will conquer and pain.
The truth we will love, and our freedom will gain.
So keep asking questions of why is it so? And sooner or later, the truth we will know.
Hey, all you children, we don't see your dad. We both need each other. Fathers love their children as much as mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you. Hey, all you children, we don't see your dad. We both need each other to share what we have. Fathers love their children as much as mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you.
Grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on
the Air.
That's us. We're back.
Now, as we said earlier, folks, Bill Cable's gone walkabout. He'll be back in about 8 weeks. We have
Fly about. He jumped on an aeroplane. He didn't walk. And I think he caught a taxi to the airport as well. So that's strictly accurate there, right?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I've heard about three stories from different places. I'm a bit lost, Ian. I'm not sure where he is.
Paris.
He's disappeared.
He's gone to Paris.
Is that right?
City of Lights.
I thought that was just a rumour.
Well, that was the rumour I heard that...
I heard walkabouts.
Okay.
So, if you see him...
I might retract my comments.
If you see him, folks, if you see him around and about, let us know where he is.
Yes.
We might have to come and pick him up.
Yeah, send him back in here.
Now, we expect he'll be gone for about 8 weeks. So over the next 8 weeks, folks, we're going to have some guest presenters about every second week. Bill Vandervoort will be here in person.
Peter Vandervoort. Rock and Pop.
Rock and Pop will be here next Tuesday in person, in the flesh. And then we have a couple of weeks later, Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency will be in. So this week what we wanted to do was outline, and in the couple of weeks that we've got a chance to present when nobody else is doing it while Bill's away, we wanted to outline a new segment that we're going to introduce called Live and Listening. Now, folks, I work for Dads in Distress, and I'm part of a team of facilitators who runs groups through the week for dads to come along and get some emotional support. So part of what we want to do with this session is give those guys a chance to be heard, a chance to get in touch with us, ask questions, have an argument, make comments, send express solutions for us to talk about. So we're going to – we've created a website or an email address. It's called liveandlistening@yahoo.com.au. We've already had somebody send us in an email, Ian.
Fair. So that's live and listening.
Live and listening. One word. And okay. It just spells out the way that is. No dots, nothing special, just liveandlistening@yahoo.com.au.
Well, so how did this person manage to get hold of
an
email address? It must be a mate of yours.
It got out. There was a leak.
A leak.
There was a leak. And it got out, obviously.
All right, okay.
So this bloke sent us in a question. Now, and that's what we want to do. What we'll do is we'll get emails from people and we'll get back to them. We might do some interviews with people about some of the issues they raise. We want to create a bit of a talk back atmosphere about this, Ian. We'll do some interviews, perhaps in Studio 2 over the phone, and we might get people in and do some live interviews and just pre-record them, put them to air. We might invite some experts in to talk about some of the big issues that people bring up.
Yep.
Yeah. One that pops to mind was the Alicia issue next week, and what do separated dads do if they're concerned about their children's attendance at school? We might talk to a school counsellor or maybe a principal or somebody from the education department just to talk about how schools deal with and treat and interact with separated fathers,
well,
separated parents.
A lot, you know, there's no across-the-board rules here because it seems to me that different schools have different policies. Like some schools, if you're a separated dad, some schools are quite happy, for example, to send out two copies of a kid's report to make sure that the father does actually get a copy of the report at the end of the term, whereas other schools...
It's a bit harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets a bit harder as they get into high school as well because there's some confidentiality issues. If your children don't want to know you to know information about them, they can stop you finding out. So it'd be good to explore some of the whys of that and some of the hows of it. I know the New South Wales Education Department has a particular policy on separated families. So do most governments around the country. The schools are state issues, so they're state government responsibilities. They're different. They're stated differently in each state, but it'd be good to have a look at that and give people some information about how they can approach their schools if they've got some drama in their families that they're concerned about.
Well, that's all good hands-on information for separated fathers. So exactly. That's what we're here for, basically, to try and help.
Exactly, and we want to have an argument, Ian.
Ah,
we do.
You've been coming in here for a couple of weeks an argument. The day, you reckon?
Well, and I'm good at it. You know, like you ask anybody, mate, they'll tell you I'm good at having
an
argument.
Well, we'll see how good you are at
I'm good at having an argument.
You better start
Might be that I'm good at starting them. Good at finishing them.
I don't think you are good at arguing, mate. Well, let's have an argument about that.
Well, that's a good idea. But you've got to remember an argument is it's a friendly affair. It's a little more serious than a discussion, Ian.
Yeah.
Discussions are just, you know, chewing the fat.
Yeah.
They don't mean
issues that you don't particularly care about. You present a point of view for whatever reason. However, an argument implies there is a bit of passion behind it.
Well, it's about something that you hold an opinion about, isn't it?
Well, that you hold a bit more dearly. I mean, I have opinions on absolutely everything. I mean, somebody in...
some of them you care about, some of them you don't.
Somebody told my 11-year-old son that his father was the most opinionated person he'd ever met in his life a few months ago. So there you go. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's what I thought. there you go.
That might have... But you haven't been talking to one of my boys, have you?
No.
That might have been said about me.
Well, look, I would have said that about you, Ray. I was surprised that he was talking about me. I actually thought he was talking about you.
He might have been, because it's been said before, I must admit.
Well, you reckon you're my kid's father. What's going on here, mate?
Now, I guess what we want to do is start that argument by talking about what's good about paying child support. You know, when I hear people, and I do a lot, because of the work that we do, we work with guys who are struggling with difficult parts of that transition to successful separated parenting. But I hear a lot of noise about the Child Support Agency, and I don't think I've ever met anybody yet who, in their critique of child support and the current system, didn't say to me, it's not like I don't want to pay child support, I want to pay child support. But we never talk about the why of that.
Well, and also, I mean, the Child Support Agency and the way they go about it, I mean, it has been said on this program that if assholes could fly, the Child Support Agency would be an airport.
Now, that's not a very nice way to
it's
start.
It's not very nice. It's not. And my apologies to all of the staff and people at the Child Support Agency, but they do have a pretty bad press, and there have been a lot of people in this very studio.
Very true.
Very unhappy about the practices and able to back it up with facts and figures and specific situations where the Child Support Agency have been seen to be acting in an arbitrary, unfair, callous manner.
And I wouldn't argue.
Cruel.
I wouldn't argue that. But I am interested. It doesn't change the fact. I'm interested to know why people think it's a good idea to pay. What's that about? Well, what is good about paying child support for your children?
Because that's what puts the bread and butter on their table. It puts the shoes on their feet when they go to school. It pays their school fees. It makes sure the rent's paid. Makes sure the electricity's gone. It makes sure they've got a table they can sit at. Makes sure, in a lot of cases, that they have clothes that are clean. It basically is provision. It is provision for children. You provide, as a father, one of your duties is to provide for your children. And that is a thing that 99% of fathers take very seriously. It is wired into us. It's genetically programmed into us. It's hardwired into us. When you have kids, as a father, if you're not a father, this will all just sound like gobbledygook to you. But if you're a dad, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, and I believe that people do know. I think they struggle to articulate it. I think they struggle to talk about it. And in a separated environment, we're asked to talk about it a lot. Why? What are we trying to achieve with what we pay? And so I think that's an interesting question. And we're about to find out if it's 99%, Ian, because we're going to ask people to send us emails and tell us what they think, and we'll give them a call and have a chat to them about it.
Well, the thing about it is what most fathers who are in a separated family situation object to is you don't want your child support money to be going for things like, for example, a boob job for your ex-wife.
Yeah.
Or for buying her a newer, better car, or, you know, paying for her to go out on the town partying up the cross on a Friday night with the girls. Those are the kind of things that most separated fathers
complain about.
Do not want to be financing.
And so I guess that raises the first issue, that when we pay child support, we pay it in trust.
Yes.
And we're not in trust.
Because we are excluded from the loop. In a lot of cases, we don't get to see our children. We are restricted by the courts in the amount of time that we can spend times.
Not only that trust is gone. We parent and live in trust in relationships. That's what we do. We go along, we hold hands, we get married, we make each other some promises. In a sense, that's a contract. People have an understanding of what the rules are and where the boundaries are in relationships. When relationships end, when adult relationships end and divorce happens, people separate, that trust dies. And then we're asked to co-parent again. And one of the requirements of co-parenting is to do it in trust. And it becomes much, much more difficult for people to do. Much more difficult. And when we pay that money, we pay it in trust.
I thought you wanted an argument. You're not going to get any argument out of me I'm talking...
I don't just want to have an argument with you, though, Ian. I want to have an argument with everybody.
The whole world.
The whole world.
Good on you, Ray.
Now, so, I mean, I guess that's the issue for me, and I want to explore what that means and how we work around it. How do we get over it? You know, if you pay $100 a week and you have two children under six, you could be confident that the money you're paying is being spent on the children, couldn't you?
Well, it depends on the situation. You know, if your ex-partner has a gambling problem or an alcohol problem or any kind of substance abuse problem, no, you cannot be certain.
That's very true. In normal circumstances where there is a degree of confidence that both parents are doing a reasonable job, you can.
Yeah, where there's not a reason why the children are going to be put second.
That's right.
In certain situations.
Exactly, where you're confident that the children's needs are going to be raised above the parents, both sides of the fence.
Yep.
I guess you can be confident that if it's only 100 a week, that they're going to eat that up, because, you know, generally kids are going to eat $50
Exactly.
If there's two, that's $50 each. They're going to eat that.
Oh, look, and you know, rent for the room. I mean, if you don't own the house, or if, you know, mortgage, whatever. I mean, you know, that's petrol.
Shoes.
To drive them to school, you know.
Yeah.
And sporting events and whatever. I mean, that's not going to get you much petrol even. That's
no.
You know, half
so
a tank
in my car. That brings up that whole question around, well, what is child support actually for? And it'd be interesting to have a look at perhaps the formula, or perhaps the research that built the formula, the costs of raising children, and just see what sort of things are considered in the formula in terms of what we are paying for. If you're paying $500 a week, I guess that's a different story.
Well, but the formula's all wrong, because it's not based on what it requires to raise children. It's based on a percentage of the father or the combined income of the couple.
And the reason for that is that the research shows that for people who live in married environments, intact, either de facto marriage or formal marriage relationships, and have children, the more they earn, as their income goes up, so does the amount of money they spend on their children.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the formula reflects that very thing. As income goes up, so does the amount that parents spend on children. It's a one-size-fits-all system. I think that's part of the problem. But it does raise that issue of what we know as a combined group of, you know, probably about 700,000 separated dads in this country. What do we know about that layer of what our child support is actually for? So we're going to have a look at some of that stuff. And we want to talk about it. We want to talk about why we want to see our kids. Why do we go to family courts? Look at the trouble we go to see our children, yet we persist. Both sides, mums and dads, separated mums persist to some degree when they don't have residency of the children. One of the things that's always interested me about it is the amount of pain and suffering we put ourselves through to maintain contact with our children. And
people who are denied that contact, you can see that the pain, the agony that they
absolutely
live with. Simply because they don't have the ability or the right, as defined by the law, to simply spend time with their children. And you can see the
people
pain
who
on these
lose
people's faces.
People who lose their children to death. Look at this, you know, there was one of the stories about Fromel yesterday was a great niece, seeking closure for the death of an uncle.
A great uncle.
Yeah. From 67
generations,
years ago.
Yeah.
Generations ago, the impact through their families. What is this impact through ours? Because this is just about grief and loss. If your children die in tragedy, it's tragic, and people don't recover. If you look around the world, I don't know, you know, I know a few people who've lost children and it changed them dramatically. Divorce seems to have the capacity to do that too when people lose children, but not to all of them. Some of them survive. I've never met anybody yet who's actually recovered from the death of a child. Yet I do know people who have recovered from divorce successfully. So what does that take? What does it take to live in a family in separation, but in some remnants of harmony? What does that look like? What does it take to achieve it? We want to talk about that as well, Ian.
Well, yeah, you kind of imagine, because we have all these, you know, people like James Bond and, you know, John Wayne and, you know, these sort of 50s kind of men who are presented as being cold, you know, conquerors of women, who basically just see women as sexual partners, and who don't form, you know, I mean, the previous generation. I mean, you've talked about your father and my father. I mean, I have a close relationship with my father now, but growing up, I did not. He was a distant character off at work. There's a lot of that, you know, we are portrayed, men are portrayed as not caring, as not having the same attachment to their offspring as the women do, because the child is, for a certain length of its development, is actually physically a part of the mother's body.
Yes.
Whereas we don't have that, and they breastfeed them, which is a seriously physical act.
Yeah. Although I think too, we need to recognise, you know, I've worked with women, and that's a burden for them, because, and that's a voice from society. That's not a voice from people. I certainly don't believe that. If we blame the feminist train for how that's happened over the years, we lose sight of the fact that for people on the ground, feminism is an academic theory. In in the real world, it might have an influence because people think about it one way or the other, but people live their lives. And I know a lot of people who don't believe that. I also know a lot of women who find that being the expert in parenting a burden, because they know they're not. And yet often we'll meet women who, within their married life, within their parenting career, have virtually had all the big decisions around the children left to them because their partners think they're the experts in children as well. It's a social expectation.
Sure.
And that can be a burden. So I think that's interesting, and we want to talk about that as well. But what are we trying to achieve by being parents? What do we want to do? What are we trying to do by raising our children the right way, or to be respectful? Or
as we see the right way.
Yeah.
That's a very subjective term as well.
It's a tough call. And they say it takes a village to raise children, and nowadays they leave two people on their own, and in many, many circumstances, one person on their own.
Well, I mean, you've only got, if you've gone through a marital breakup, you know, when your relationship is in trouble, there are very little institutions, or there's very little there to help you keep the family together. But as soon as you want to split up, there's social workers, doctors, lawyers, police. There's a host of people who are prepared to rush in and help you split up and divide up the goodies and basically get you apart and get you set up separate. But in terms of maintaining that family structure, there's not very much in our society that supports and tries to foster that and tries to help couples who are going through difficulties get through those difficulties.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting to look back at how you resolve conflict in the family. You know, I think probably one of three ways. You either give in, win, or compromise. If it is that conflict can't be resolved and you can't find a solution, often it continues to just be conflict in the background of the relationship. I would think probably there's enough conflict around in families that all of those things are happening at the same time. Some things you give up on.
Yep.
Some things you dig your heels in and you win on.
Some things you compromise.
Some things you compromise, and some things you just let go and you never resolve it.
Yeah.
In separated environments, there's a third party to come in and resolve that conflict.
Yeah.
All of that conflict that used to sit remaining unresolved is now resolvable because I can go and get a friend to come and take sides with me. I can get a solicitor. I can get a judge. And I can pull in this system to resolve all of that other conflict that normally sits behind a lot of families that just never gets resolved. Does that make sense to you?
Makes a lot of sense.
We want to talk about that as well. And in separated environments especially, it is what causes so much context, so much drama between parents, and then the children are part of that. That's the big part of the problem for me. We'll go to a break, and we'll be right back, folks.
But you know that it's not family, it's not home. have a darling wife that once I had. Well, I'm pleased to say that she still talks to me. But I try not to think of what went wrong, 'cause if I say that I was right, she might say that she was right. And the only rights I care about are visitor rights, yeah. On any other day, I might care what you say, but every Saturday is Father's Day. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but I've got calls me dad. We go when he wants to go. We do what he wants to do. I tell him everything I know, 'cause I do anything to prove. Yeah, I do anything to prove. But every Saturday I will do just what he says. Every single Saturday is Father's Day. And you might call it sad, you might call me mad, but it don't feel so bad when he calls me. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but it don't feel half bad when he calls me. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but God, I feel so glad when he calls me dad. Yeah, he calls me dad. I haven't always been a single man.
Dads in Distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back, folks. We're on 89.3 2GLFM and you're with Dads on the Air. Now, as I said before, Ian, there was a leak. Somebody leaked that Live and Listening was coming, and somebody's already snuck in and given us a question. Now, this is from a guy who is currently paying $500 a month in child support, hasn't been separated all that long. He's paying for two children under six. Seems like a fair amount, doesn't it?
Well, that costs more than that to bring up two children.
You'd think so, wouldn't
under
you?
The age of six.
Yep. And
in Sydney, are we in Sydney? I mean, if he lives on an island somewhere, you know, on a Pacific island, maybe Samoa, Fiji might be a bit cheaper.
Maybe even Tasmania might be a bit cheaper.
Exactly. But living here in Sydney, it costs a lot of money to get out of bed in the morning.
It doesn't matter whether you're paying rent or paying a mortgage, you're paying rent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got to live. So it's not a huge amount.
You've got to pay for your space. You've got to pay for your space, and you've got to pay for everything that comes with it.
Yeah, $120-odd a week for two children. It's $60-odd bucks each. You would think they would, like we said before, you'd think they would eat that. But
yeah, that's got to be minimum, really, to bring up a kid. Inside.
As a result of the separation, he's stressed. He's a professional. He doesn't want to go to his employer and say, I need stress leave, which I think's reasonable. I know the employer. I don't want to identify the guy on air, but I know the employer, and I wouldn't want to go to that employer if I worked for him and tell them that my personal life was in such disarray, I was that stressed that I needed to take some leave. So he wants to take some leave without pay. And his question is, will he have to continue to pay child support during that period he takes a couple of months off just to get himself back together as a result of the stress of the separation and working through the issues that have come about?
Well, the first thing you've got to say is the children can't just kind of suspend their lives and you know, go and sit in a cupboard for a couple of weeks while dad gets his life together. I mean, the children still have to eat, they still need shoes, they still have to have the rent paid. So if he is not going to contribute the $500 a month to his children's welfare and upbringing, it has to come from somewhere.
It does, yeah. And, you know, I guess the question for me is, what would you do? How would you deal with that if you're still living in the same house as the children?
So he's still living in the same house with the children?
No, he's separated. But
okay.
But the question for me is, what would you do? How would you think through that issue? If I was in the I'm in a similar situation, only I'm married, I'm still living in the same family. If I wanted to take some time out from work for stress, how would I manage that?
Well, you'd manage that with your partner, your wife, presumably. You might get extended family, grandparents, uncles, aunts, whoever, to contribute or to help out under certain situation. Well, in terms
I'd go to
maybe
Centrelink.
Babysitting.
I'd go to Centrelink.
Yeah, but you're not going to take your kids to Centrelink for Tuesday morning because you've got to go to see the doctor or something.
I mean, I'd get Centrelink to feed them for me though while I was having some time off. If I was, you know, I think it's legitimate for me to say this. The first person who needs to be well is me. If I'm stressed and I'm not well, I need to be well to be there for them. I think that's an overriding issue. I think people are entitled to be well around their children, and if he's not well, he should be entitled to get well so that he can be a good parent.
Well, and also to do his job. I mean that's the means by which he wins the bread that supports the family. So he needs to be in a condition that he can go to work and that he can commit himself professionally in whatever field of endeavor he's engaged in so that he can continue to be worth the salary that he's earning, that he can actually earn whatever it is that he's paid, that goes on to support his family.
Because if he remains stressed, his long-term viability in the workforce is limited.
Exactly.
Exactly right. So we've got to be well.
Yeah, over a long period of time, if you're not performing, then you lose the job. That, you know, that's of no benefit to anybody. So there's issues there.
Exactly, in the longer term. So we've got to be well. But, you know, the first thing parents need to do is to get well to be parents. You know, the best parents are well parents, and children need their parents to be well, and they know when they're not. So relationships are affected when we're not well. Our children look to us for safety. They understand and to some degree feel the emotions that we feel. And so if we're not well, they know. They're usually the first to
know. It impacts on them.
Yeah. And it impacts on them. So he's entitled to go out and get well. So I would look at it from the point of view, what would I do if I was still living in the same house as the children? The first thing I'd do would be to talk to the partner. I guess in separated environments, that's not viable. But as I thought through it, you would not leave your children hungry if you did take a couple of months off leave without pay, because Centrelink would pick up the difference. We live in a country that has a safety net for a couple, and whether you're separated or not, I think it's relevant or it's important to acknowledge that you're still a couple in the eyes of Centrelink because you have children.
Sure, but the child support agency is not going to see it that way.
Well, I guess I don't know that they wouldn't. I would contend that they might. It would depend on the rationale, on how you argued your case, and how you argued your case would depend on the application that you would make to child support to take that. You don't need to go to your employer to tell them that you're stressed. You can go to a doctor and get a certificate that would say that you need some time out. If that's the case, it would be good to get some counselling as well, so you could get a referral to a psych under the Medicare system, and you could provide some evidence to Centrelink for a sickness benefit. And I think child support would accept that if there was a sickness benefit behind it. If you met Centrelink criteria for a sickness benefit to take time off without pay, because the stress is not related to work but to your home life, then I think child support would let you.
Do you think so? You think because their tendency is to label you a deadbeat dad, insist that you get back to work, that you do provide these funds that they've deemed you capable of earning, whether you're earning it or not, and that you just get back to bloody work, sunshine, shoulder the burden, stop whinging, stop being a wimp, and get on with it.
Yeah, well, under normal circumstances, I think that'd be right. If you didn't go to Centrelink, if you didn't qualify under the Centrelink provisions, then I think child support would do exactly that, and they would they'd make you pay continuously throughout the 4 months.
They would hound you, that they would confiscate your passport so you can't leave the country to go and take the holiday that you need to get away from it.
Well, it might not be a holiday, it might be just some time out, but I think they would. And I think the other thing too is it would depend on the attitude of the mother. If the mother was relentlessly at child support to take action and put a significant objection to you not paying child support for that period of time, I think that would impact on child support decision making as well, because I think child support would take the view that, well, if we say no, he's got to pay anyway, he's still got, he can still take us into the courtroom and get relief from a court. I think that would be their attitude. I don't think that's true. Filing applications in family courts for departure to test the decisions that Centrelink make is very, very hard and very, very expensive.
Yes.
But I think that the child support would take that view, if that makes sense.
Well, it's a possibility. I personally am lucky. I don't have any relationship with child support agency. I have an agreement with my ex, and I pay her, and she tells them that she's happy with what I pay her, and really it's nothing to do with them, and that's how we see it.
Yes.
And if I was to suddenly tell her that I wasn't going to pay her anymore because I couldn't, I mean, that would possibly change that whole relationship. She might suddenly think, well, I need help. I mean, child support are there, that's their job, and she would maybe get child support onto me and keep me producing the money that she needs to bring up my son.
Yes, and rather than having an appropriate process for that decision to be made through the avenues of child support, it would depend on the person that you met, the attitude of the person on the other end of the phone, how emotionally well he is. Is he, if he's stressed and he's feeling the effect, the knock-on effect of the separation, is he in a place to make that application?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, a lot of, depending on you know, if the separation's only happened, you know, within 12 months ago, there's going to be a lot of emotional pain around it, probably, and this is definitely going to affect the way a person can deal with it. And a lot of people simply, if they've gone through, you know, a child support battle in the family court, they don't want to get involved with officialdom. They don't want to go and sit in somebody's office and discuss their personal life anymore. They don't want this.
And, you know, governments, successive governments have been, and experts for that matter, have been quick to tell us that a family court system can't be a one-size-fits-all. Can't be. Because families are dynamic, and yet the child support system that they administer, successive governments, is a one-size-fits-all system. Perhaps that's one of the reasons why this would be so difficult, but it highlights the fact that it is so hard for people, especially in the early days of separation, to work their way through this. It's a very different thinking, isn't it? In terms of the decision-making process, what do I do? How do I move forward? You know, perhaps in my relationship right now, I would make that decision myself because, I would just run out of headspace and I would come home one day and say, I can't go to work anymore. I'm going to go and see a psych. And the wife would have to live with that to some degree. That might impact the relationship, but it wouldn't thrust me into some bureaucratic application to get permission.
Exactly. And you know, with the child support agent, I mean, they take taxpayer money to go and enforce their will upon, you know, people who are supposed to be paying child support, whether they be fathers or mothers, that they use, they're not using that money for the good of the children. They're using that money to hound the non-payer and to get them into a situation where they have to pay, and they have vast resources they're quite happy to spend hundreds of dollars to get tens of dollars out of a non-payer, hundreds of dollars of taxpayer money, which you would think would be better spent if it went to the children in that situation, rather than hounding a parent who may have stress-related issues, who is basically going down in an emotional screaming heap,
and could continue that downhill slide. The child support legislation does highlight the fact that children should be subject to the ups and downs and normal cut and thrust of family life, emotionally and financially. You would think that this would be one of those times. You know, I was listening to somebody on the radio this morning say, this guy was talking about some other thing, and he just said, one of the things that's just happened to me is I just took 2 years off to spend some time with my kids. People make those choices. That should be okay. Even outside of the issue of stress, I think it should be okay to make those choices about change around their life.
Sure.
Yeah. And And when it's around stress,
that all comes back to money, though. I mean, you've got to be able to afford to take choice. If you're, you know, if you're making $600 a week in Sydney, you can't afford that kind of. You don't have that choice. You don't have the financial firepower to affect that sort of change in your life.
Well, I guess that's true, and we do need to defend the taxpayer to some degree, because at the end of the day, Centrelink is paid for by you and me. But by the same token, if we're not emotionally well. If we're not emotionally well, the long-term consequences for that whole family is going to be a lot more dour for the taxpayer, because if he doesn't repair his mental health now, then he won't be a professional in a year's time. He won't be paying $500 a month in a year's time. He won't have children who have reasonable access to both of their parents, who are subject to the love and support of both of those parents, because one of them perhaps may fall in a hole and disappear out of the children's lives, and then disappear out of the workforce, and then be, you know.
Well, you know, we've got to look at the spectre of suicide, the number of people who, you know, 13 people a day, it's been estimated, here in Australia.
Right now it's 7 a day across the suicide cohort.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, you know, in the way that the figures are reported. I mean, if somebody drives his car into a tree in the middle of the night, it may be seen as a car accident.
That's
whereas
right.
In reality, it may well be a suicide.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, at least we know it's seven.
7 a day. That's a huge figure for a population around 20 million.
It's higher than the national road toll.
Yeah, by a long shot. Why do they waste so much money on the road toll and
that's,
completely ignore?
And that's
this
just
issue.
Counting men. That's not counting women. The women, the female suicide rate is certainly nowhere near as high as a male.
4 out of 5 suicides.
But if you take the total suicide rate in this country, it's well above the national road toll. And look at the money we spend bringing that down. So, you know, the longer term is that this guy's doing the right thing by thinking about taking some time off.
Yep.
I want to explore this, and I will. Thanks for the email, by the way, to the person who sent it in. I will get back in touch with you, and we will answer this question with you more personally, and we will go out there and look for some answers. We may talk to somebody from the Child Support Agency and see what they have to say.
Yeah, that's always good to get their side of the story, because they always bring in, you know, that people going through child support issues, you don't know what it's like from their side. There's two sides to every story.
And we'll end up with some tips and hints for how this guy can go about it and perhaps get an outcome for himself. Yeah?
All right, well, let's just go to a quick track, and then we're just about running out of time here on Dad's on the Air. So this is Gypsy and the Cat, Human Desire.
Fire, that's human desire. rot at the foot of my grave. Wicked children dance and cry. They walk alone in the future.
Okay, so we're back. That's it for today, folks. So don't forget, live and listening at yahoo.com.au. Tell us what you think. Ask us questions. Give us solutions. Tell us what you want to know about. Sound all right, Ann?
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great idea, Ray. Now, this program, if you want to hear it again or if you missed any part of it, you can download it in its entirety from our website, www.dadsontheair.net. And that should be available from sometime either this afternoon, late this afternoon, or tomorrow morning. Thanks to our wonderful crew in the back room. We're talking Greg Andreessen and Peter van der Voorde, who make sure that all of this happens. So I think that's us, Ray. Got anything else to add?
Another day, another no dollar. And Peter van der Voorde will be here next week, live in person. So listen in for the show next week, and we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.